Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now the argument for letting Edward Snowden come back to the United States from the right and the left. You may have read the New York Times and Guardian editorials yesterday saying that Snowden should receive whistleblower protections, but there's also a conservative argument for bringing Snowden back, the better to find out what he knows and stop him from continuing to release information. Amy Davidson, a senior editor of The New Yorker and author of the Close Read column there, she's been writing about the Snowden whistleblower story. Hi, Amy. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you wrote about the two cases for offering Snowden protection recently, and let's actually start with the NSA-friendly argument. Here is Rick Ledgett of the NSA on 60 Minutes a few weeks ago when asked about whether Snowden could be offered amnesty.
So my personal view is, yes, it's worth having a conversation about. I would need assurances that the remainder of the data could be secured, and my bar for those assurances would be very high. It would be more than just an assertion on his part.
Now, the next day, the Obama administration very quickly rejected that idea and said, no, we're not going to give him amnesty. But does the idea that Snowden is less dangerous if he's back in U.S. hands have any traction within national security circles, but beyond that one official, Amy?
You know, it appears that it does. So I would say that it's possible he wasn't being so straightforward about the assurances that he wanted or what he would want from Snowden. The idea that Snowden could sort of give back the data and make sure that nothing else is released, it isn't realistic. Snowden has said, whether you believe him or not, that he doesn't have the data anymore, that he's given it to reporters. And whether he has anything or has any insurance files, it's clear that the Guardian has files in U.S. offices and here, other that Glenn Greenwald does, that the Washington Post and Bart Gellman do. So the files are out there. There's no way for the government to kind of get them back. So why is it that people like Ledgett within the government do seem to be interested in some sort of deal? And I think it's one really important thing is they don't seem to, and the Times reported on this, they don't seem to this day know entirely what Snowden has. They don't know which files he has and the entire extent of it. And it's not even clear that they're quite sure how this all happened. Now, that's difficult for them because there have been a couple of times where one thing has come out and they've kind of tried to explain it away with reference to something else that then also turns out to be false when the next document comes out. They've also said that it makes them harder to warn our allies if something is going to come out. And also, you know, one reason that the Guardian has said that they've only printed about 1% of what they have, because the reporters who have these things are going through a very careful process of figuring out what is actually dangerous for national security or individuals to release. And if there could be a productive conversation of that without sort of this threat of prosecution, that could be helpful for a lot of sites. And also,
so with so much already still unpublished, do you think that Snowden would even make the deal that NSA official, Rick Ledgett, on 60 Minutes was suggesting that he would catalog the extent of what he stole in exchange for some kind of clemency?
You know, there's only one way to find out, and that's for them to have a conversation with him. But he has said that he wants to come back, and, you know, his advisors have said that he wants to come back. And I don't think that, you know, Russia is not a place where he set out to be. And when you hear a lot from the government about the dangers of him being in Russia, you know, they can do something about that, too. Maybe bring him back here. You know, he's in Russia because he was stranded there when he was in transit to perhaps trying to get to Latin America, and his passport was revoked. So if we really feel that it's not great for him to be in sort of the ambit of Vladimir Putin, that's also a reason on the government side. And that, I don't know if you want to, that also brings us to sort of the second separate case for
amnesty. Go ahead.
Which is that, you know, maybe he deserves it. He's earned his freedom in a real way. That this is sort of more of what the Times and the Guardian were talking about, that he, at some risk to himself, made it possible for us to have a debate that, as a democracy, we really needed to have, that through him and not through any other means that was available, we learned not only that the NSA was operating in ways that went beyond what the public understood and had consented to, and also was doing so on the basis of not only secret operations, but secret interpretations of laws. And also it became clear that really the mechanisms of oversight had broken down. You know, I think if there's one moment that you would say sort of clinches this case for Edward Snowden, it's the experience that Ron Wyden, the senator, had when he, you know, in a hearing, having had a sense of what was going on from his access to classified information, asked James Clapper, the director of National Intelligence, a question about whether the NSA was collecting records on millions of Americans. And Clapper in that forum just lied to him. And that is a moment where you say, you know, it didn't work the other way. There was something...
Right, that was prior to Snowden.
Prior to Snowden. And after Snowden's revelations were public, Clapper actually had to apologize. It became clear that exactly where you think oversight should be taking place, a senator asking an official a question, you know, in a hearing, you know, the public had been given a reassuring lie.
And I think another turning point was the federal court ruling recently that
absolutely.
The sweeping NSA data collection program, where basically every phone call you make is recorded, at least from what number to what number and for what duration and at what time, that's unconstitutional. I know that we had some listeners chime in that changed their view of Snowden from criminal to whistleblower. Now, of course, if a higher court strikes that down, I don't know if people's views will change back. But still, I think that was a moment that people who maybe don't follow the news so closely started to sit up and think, maybe this guy revealed something important.
I think that's really true, because the NSA's argument has been sort of that what they're doing is obviously constitutional and obviously legal and just what anybody in their position would do. And, you know, a federal judge said, you know, it's not obvious. It's in fact, it seemed clear to him that it most likely violated the Fourth Amendment. You know, another judge found, you know, reached a different conclusion, which just really reinforces that this is something that needs to be adjudicated by, you know, the institutions that we have for these things are public courts, not our secret courts. You know, that there are things that really need to be heard by the Supreme Court. The NSA relying in a very surprising way on a 1979 Supreme Court ruling that sort of may not actually be so relevant to this. You know, there are things that just needed to happen. And Snowden made that possible.
So between the arguments that you've outlined from the right, securing some of this information, perhaps in exchange for amnesty or clemency or a easy plea bargain or some such thing, and the arguments from the left, if you want to put it that way, that Snowden just did the right thing, do you think the Obama administration might actually budge?
I think if everybody calms down and looks at it, again, I wouldn't say securing the information, but getting to understanding the information. I think that one problem is that the government, in a way, isn't seeing its own interest in amnesty or clemency or some sort of pardon, because people in the government are so angry about this that they're not looking at it clearly. Those on the other side who just, you know, feel that he just deserves amnesty, I think have thought less about why it is also practical for the government.
Yeah. By the way, are you surprised that it took The Guardian until yesterday to editorialize in favor of Snowden? The Times is one thing, but The Guardian is an explicitly left-leaning paper. It was the home of Glenn Greenwald at the time that he broke the Snowden stories. I always just assumed that The Guardian had this position, that Snowden was kind of a hero. Why do you think it took till yesterday for them to come out with an explicit endorsement of clemency?
You know, I'm not sure that they haven't said it one way or the other, you know, but I think that there is, we've reached a moment where people are just laying out their views on this, as you said, with the court rulings. A lot of people have changed their mind. A lot of people in Congress seem to be talking about it differently, realizing that their oversight was not, you know, as on top of it as they might have thought. Also, the president's advisory panel also had a report recently that you know, these were people the president chose, and that, you know, maybe not that much had been expected about, but they were also very disturbed by what they found and recommended a lot of changes, and that wouldn't have happened without him. So I think that if the Guardian had said it in one way or the other before, but this is a moment where this is being talked about and people are kind of laying their cards down a little bit.
Amy Davidson writes the Close Read column for The New Yorker. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Up next and finally today, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark Goes Dark on Broadway tomorrow. We'll review its expensive and troubled history with Spider-Man playwright Glenn Berger, who co-wrote the musical and now has a book about it. Stay with us.